Ray, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Nice.
What's going on?
Hey, lots is happening, man. Robin Brownlee also with us as well. Now, I know you're obviously a sports fan. Were you able to watch any of the opening games in NCAA today?
You know what? I didn't today because I've been away. I had a lot of stuff to catch up, but I definitely saw the highlight of the dude falling off the chair. Yeah. Like, it's amazing what will become an image of the tournament. No matter what he does, he'll be, hey, you're the coach who fell off the chair.
Well, because he tore his Achilles celebrating the previous win. So he's a pretty fired up coach. The thing about basketball is those final second buzzer beaters, you get two major upsets in the first three games of the day, two number 14 seeds over number three. It's hard to compare this really to any other tournament in sports, just the amount of upsets and the sport itself that endears to upsets.
It is, Jason, but I don't know where I got to this, maybe in the last couple of years, but the best part of the NCAA tournament is the first couple of days.
Oh, yeah.
Right when there's all the games played and they're all crossing over and there's a great finish here and a great finish there. It's like the first round of the playoffs. Most often, to me, that's the best round of the playoffs. There's multiple games every night. There's an overtime game here. Oh, did you see that play there? And as there becomes less teams and the games get spread out, the great moments get less and less. And the chances for a colossal upset are gone because the teams that get through, for the most part, by the time you get to in the NHL, like you go from 16 to 8 to 4, by the time you get there, I mean, anybody can beat anybody. They're all the teams are all different, but they're all the same. They're all really good. In the first round, man, you can get a stunner.
Yeah.
And that's what I would equate it to.
So then that's right now at the playoffs, a stunner would be Ottawa coming back to catch Boston. Do you think they can?
2 weeks ago, I did a game in Ottawa. The Bruins were there, and it was, a must win. They were 5 points back, had a game in hand. They totally dominated the game, the Senators did, and lost 3-0. In the second period, they outshot Boston 21-8, got outscored 3-0. Hit the goalpost 3 times. I mean, it was unbelievable. You're like, how can this be? Anyway, it turned out to be a 3-1 loss, I believe the final was. So it's 7 points and it's done. Now all of a sudden it's 4. They play tonight and they got a game in hand. The one thing to keep in mind, though, is Ottawa doesn't have as many regulation and overtime wins. So they've got to be in front of Boston. They can't be tied. And so that's one more thing. So it's not just win your game in hand and beat Boston tonight. You got to win another one over top of them. I think they're going to fall short, but I would have never in a million years thought this was possible to get to where they are.
Well, the thing is, Ray, and I think you probably touched on it, that last time out might turn out to be very important because the Senators have been hot. Hammond's a great story, the nickname, all that stuff. They cannot play at this rate, or common sense suggests they can't play this well this long. Sooner or later, they come back down to earth, and they don't have any margin to come back down to earth.
Well, I mean, look at the number of teams that if you look around, Robin, that are trying to make up, 5 or 6 or 7 points here. And there are a few of them that have played really well. And then you go, in the last 3 weeks, they've picked up 1 point.
Mm-hmm.
You can't make up the ground anymore. There's too many teams that are all playing each other. Somebody gets a point here. Somebody wins a game over there. Look at that. Like, they got a gift from the gods the other night, the Senators did, that Buffalo beat Boston in the shootout. That's an extra point that, if it were 5 points today, you'd say, well, no, it can't be. But now it's only 4. So, yeah, it is possible. They have zero margin for error. And Andrew Hammond is, I know him a little bit. He's from Vancouver. He's a really nice kid. Really nice kid, and he's worked incredibly hard and was not even he was whatever's next after an afterthought. That's what he was.
Yep.
He lost his first 14 games in college. He was 0-12-2 in his freshman year. He went on to have a really good career at Bowling Green. He signs with Ottawa the week before Robin Leonard got hurt. So Craig Anderson was out. Robin Leonard is playing all the games, and somebody asked Dave Cameron, the head coach, do you see getting Hammond in a game soon? And his answer was no. That was it. No. Well, then he gets run over, Leonard does, and they put Hammond in. He gives up two goals in his first five shots in the third period against Carolina. And there was talk then they might have to go get somebody. It was right before the deadline. There's nobody that can tell you they saw this coming, including Andrew, except now he's the Hamburglar, and they're, I mean, it's an incredible story. Just an awesome story for a really good kid.
Ray Ferraro from TSN joins us. It is one of, you know, Steve Penny's a name that comes to the forefront right now, kind of out of nowhere, and it was great. But
well, for me, it's Patrick Lalime.
Yeah, no, another good
he
one.
Lalime, if I'm not mistaken, was like 10-0-1 before he lost in Pittsburgh, his rookie year. And, you know, and so, I mean, the parallel is actually even more direct than Penny, who came from left field, but his was more playoffs, wasn't it?
Yeah, more playoffs a little bit. And the thing was, it's, and you've seen this, Ray, you know, Jim Carrey is probably the prime example, ooh, like of a great year. And like goaltending is such a hard position to evaluate. Like Devin Dubnyk's a prime example. People thought his career was over, and now he's likely a Vezina Trophy candidate. He's not going to win, but he's likely going to be a Vezina Trophy candidate and probably get a big contract this summer, either from the Wild or somebody in free agency. And, you know, that position, and I know you never played it, Ray, but you played with a lot of different goalies. Like, is that position more mentally reliant than others?
Well, I always wonder, you know, if I had a bad shift and turned the puck over a couple times and, you know, nothing really happens and, you know, there's a save or whatever, you go back to the bench and you got about 2.5 minutes to wash it from your brain, and then you get back on the ice. If you're a goalie, you make a mistake, it's in the net. And while you're trying to wash it from your brain, here comes the next rush.
Mm-hmm.
Like the good ones, they must not ever remember where they put their keys. Like their memory has to be so short. Here it is, it's in the net. Oh yeah, I've already forgot about it. They look up the clock, take a drink of water, and it's gone. And that, for a lot of guys, they just can't do that. And you see, like, when one goes in, there's a tendency to give up another one in relatively short order. And, you know, I would say the scouting of the goaltending position is got to be as much a crapshoot as anything else, because you can see physically what they are, but you can't tell what they're going to be like, you know, can they handle that? Can they handle the stress? Okay, he's a good goalie. Can he be a number one guy? Or is he someone that really needs to play one game and practice 3 or 4 days and he can't handle the stress of playing over and over and over again? The Dubnyk story to me is remarkable. And not only that he's played so well, but he's played 30 games in a row. That's almost, you know, he's going to get to a half a season in a row. Like, who would have thought that last October?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. And you know Devin a little bit. I mean, you've been out to Edmonton a lot. He's a pretty cool character. He's a very intelligent guy, you know. Did he win or lose? You never really knew by looking at him. When I look at goalies, I try and figure out, okay, what's the best characteristic? Is it the battler? Because some goaltenders are battlers. Or is it the guy that's kind of like, whatever, like you say, short memory. Which works best? Has there been a whatever guy that you played with?
I'm just going to go through here. So I played with the best goalies I played with at the time were Mike Liut, fiery, combative guy, Ron Hextall, who was, I mean, legendary for everything, you know, for his battle and for his temper. And Glenn Healy was he fought because he wasn't very big, and he, you know, he fought and scrapped. And then when I got to St. Louis, the best goalie was Brent Johnson, and he was really laid back. There doesn't seem to be a mix of them. Like, just look, like, I would say Marty Brodeur would be, if I had to put them in one column or the other, Marty would be in the laid back column. Patrick Waugh would be in the fiery column. And if you stuck me with either one of those guys on my team, I would take either. So I don't think there's not one mold for anything. Everybody's looking for players that play, in quotes, the right way. But there's a right way for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
you know, Boyd Gordon can't play the right way the same way that Jordan Eberle can play the right way. They're different players. They do different things. And so when if you're scouting looking for, I always have this thought that teams are chasing what other teams are. And even if you go towards that mold, you have to remember you don't have the same player, the same personality that's in the team you're chasing. Everybody wants to be the LA Kings. Well, good. So go find Jonathan Quick and Drew Doughty and Ange Kopitar, and then you can start building around that. But say you got similar players. You don't have similar people
mm-hmm.
because they're different people. And so that makes it a real challenge. I think if I were running a team, my scouting mantra would be, when you go scout a player, I want to know what they are first. And once you list what they are, then start listing what they aren't. And if what they are outweighs what they aren't, then we've got a player that we can be interested in.
Ray Ferraro joins us. And you know, and that's an interesting way to look at it, Ray, because when you find out, okay, what they are and you're building your team, you can't have six of the players who what they are is all very similar if they're all defensemen, right? You can't have, like, you look at LA and we talk about Doughty and them, they've always had a few veteran heavy guys in the back end who aren't pretty and the advanced stats guys might not like them, but man, they're hard to play against and they wear down guys and they're able to last longer in those long playoff runs.
They are. I mean, the phrase, Jason, when I think of this that drives me up the walls is we're looking for 200-foot players. Really, to me, code is you're looking for a guy that doesn't make many mistakes. I'll take a few 60-foot players on my team from the blue line in. I'll let Jordan, in my when I say let, I'll overlook Jordan Eberle if he doesn't get a puck out on the defensive wall if he's got 12 points in six games. If Nail Yakupov is playing like he or producing like he is now, I can forgive a turnover in the neutral zone. But if he's not producing, either of those guys, if they're not putting points on the board, then I can't look at it the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the teams that are or the scouts that are looking for the perfect 200-foot player, they're looking for Jonathan Toews. Okay, we'll start the list behind Jonathan Toews of guys like him in the league. Well, you got Patrice Bergeron. I'm kind of doing this on the fly here.
Datsyuk,
Zetterberg. She's pretty short list.
Yeah, there's not many. Would you put Kopitar on that list?
Yes, I would. I think Sean Monahan is going to get there. I really like him a lot. But he's not there yet because he's just a kid.
Yeah.
Sedins?
Pardon?
The Sedins?
Not anymore.
No. Yeah.
You know, so I mean... Say you get to 10.
Yeah.
You know, so you're scouting, looking for that player. Wow, you're going to be disappointed a lot.
Oh,
you're not going to find them. They're not around. I wanted to be a 200-foot player. We called it something else, but, you know, but I wasn't that.
Now, interesting you bring that up, Ray. So you wanted to, and I think people understand, like, why couldn't you become that? Because it's not as easy as people think.
I was quick. I wasn't fast. I was pretty strong, and I'm short and squat. You know, I could strong on the puck. But if I had to play with a defensive focus, I couldn't have produced. I would have been gassed playing in my zone. So I took a couple of shortcuts because I knew my calling card was to produce offense. I would look at the game from the offensive side of the puck more often than not. So the guys that can look at it from the defensive side and still produce offense, that's amazing to me. I don't think people have any idea how difficult that is to do. Like, to do what Patrice Bergeron does and what Pavel Datsyuk does and what Jonathan Toews do on a nightly basis is amazing. It really is. And that's what, I mean, that in my mind, that's what makes them stand out above a guy that scores 50 goals that can't do much else. Although, maybe I'm a little different.
Yeah.
I'll take that guy on my team.
Totally. To me, it's still the hardest thing to do.
But you got a $5 million clock in your rink, right? Hanging from the roof. If it says zero at the end of the night, you can't win. So my 50-goal score, I've never had him penalty killing because he's no good at it. What do I care? I'll find somebody else to penalty kill. It takes all kinds to build a team. Nobody liked Jeff Carter's game in Columbus, but when he went to L.A., they liked him a lot. And he's got two Stanley Cups.
Yeah, and an Olympic gold medal, that kind of helps too. So.
Right, but he scores. Yeah. I mean, Bob McKenzie used to rattle me all the time, rattle my cage, because at one time I said to him, Bob and I were discussing Jeff Carter, and I said, yeah, but Bob, he's a one-trick pony. He goes, yeah, pretty good trick, which is to score. And so for about the next 2 years, every time Carter scored, I'd get a text from Bob. It's like clockwork, one-trick pony. Now he's just got tired because he's won the discussion.
It's Ray, you know this. The 200-foot thing, too, it seems to mean safe player to me. The top-end guys are hard to find in that mold, but there's nothing harder to do than put the puck in the net. That's why they get the money. You've got to have those guys, the 200-foot guys, the corner men. You can't just build with everything the same.
You can have a whole bunch of guys that are 6'2" and 215 pounds, and they'll rattle the puck around the end boards, and you got great possession numbers, and you never score. Or you could have a bunch of 5'10" guys that zip all over the place and handle the puck, and they got great skill, but they can't get the puck from the 215-pound players. And so you have to try and find a marriage between the two. And the teams that have it, man, they're fantastic. Like, you know, Tyler Toffoli's not a big guy. Trevor Lewis isn't a big guy. Marion Gaborik's never been confused with a 200-foot player. They don't need him to be a 200-foot player. They need him to score. They need Tyler Toffoli to score. And they do. And they fit in Los Angeles. And maybe they wouldn't fit quite as well somewhere else. Would Jarrett Stoll be as effective somewhere else? Probably not. But he's in the perfect spot in L.A. And when he's out of the lineup like now, they miss him.
Yeah, and it illustrates to have a good team, you need a great mix of different guys who can fill different roles. Ray, always great to talk to you. What games you got coming up?
Oh, as I've dubbed this one tonight, I've got the Dysfunction Bowl, San Jose and Toronto tonight.
Enjoy that one.
Oh, when you think the Leafs can't be beaten, then San Jose comes out with this carnival this week. And so, the Leafs are playing out the string. I think we're going to see the Sharks' 10-year playoff run come to an end. And then I think there's going to be, in my opinion, there will be major structural changes.
Agreed.
In San Jose.
Yeah, I agree. I think Wilson and McClellan are both gone.
It's the only time I can remember where the player holds all the cards. Joe Thornton's not going anywhere.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and he won't. His whole family's there. He's not leaving. So
he's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And so that leaves ownership with far fewer options than they might have in another day.
Right.
It'll be interesting.
You betcha. Enjoy the Dysfunction Bowl. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
You betcha. See you guys. Have a good one.